right here over WOR New York. 4:15, and good afternoon, Bob. The same goes to you, Ray.
Oh, I love it!
Thank you, Roger, and hello again, everybody.
Roger.
Hey, isn't it a beautiful day here in the big city?
Sure is. Turned kind of surprisingly beautiful.
Looking out the picture window over towards New Jersey, it's really cleared up nicely. Very, very lovely. And looking over this way up towards Connecticut and Westchester County, it's beautiful. And way out this way towards Long Island, it's clearing up nicely.
Isn't that exciting?
Yes, it is.
We have our buffet table set with some roast beef this afternoon and some sliced ham. What else is that? Chicken over there?
Pâté de foie gras, of course.
Yeah.
Roast ham. Beluga caviar, black.
All the kind of stuff we find that our guests prefer when they drop by.
And shrimp cocktail. They all look about like your thumb. A nice big size.
Good one.
Very good.
So for about $6 a pound. But I think we have to get to our features, it being that time. We'll be here until 7, and we begin with this.
It's time for the adventures of Charlie Chu, famed Oriental sleuth, as he and his number one son attempt to solve the case of the invisible killer.
So that's the way it shapes up, Chu. My men have talked to all the neighbors, and they swear nobody went into this apartment or came out around the time of the killing.
Or may I make a humble observation that may benefit Inspector?
Gee, Pop, have you already observed something important?
Our number one son, like man who create oversized tennis equipment, make too much racket.
Gosh, Pop, I just want to help you crack this case wide open.
Number one son, best help illustrious father crack case open by keeping mouth shut.
Chu, what was the observation you started to make?
Charlie Chu wished to observe that evidence still remaining may help us get better picture of killer who has left than what neighbors saw when killer was still here.
I'm afraid I don't follow you, Chu.
We'll demonstrate. Notice that small bit of bright green thread is stuck to victim's clothing. Yet victim wears nothing made of green that could unravel.
Gosh, Pop, what does that prove? The dead man's also wearing basketball shoes, but he's sure not playing basketball.
Number one son, like man who has trouble figuring income tax, can't make logical deduction.
Well, I tend to agree with the boy, Chu. I don't see how green thread helps us solve the case. Lots of things are made with green thread.
But please to note placement of evidence on victim. Thread stuck to nightcap. This means killer was tall person who shed on dead man from above.
Gee, Pop, that would tie in with those big footprints we saw in the hallway. They must have been made by somebody at least 7 feet tall.
Hence, we must ask ourselves important question. How could person of such size enter building without attracting attention of neighbors?
I think I know, Pop. Maybe no one paid attention because it was somebody they were used to seeing who came in and out every day.
Number one son may finally be showing intelligence inherited from father's side of family. Inspector, was lock on door tampered with?
No, and my men were confused by that point, Chu. Apparently the killer had a key to this place and let himself in. Oddly enough, there were no fingerprints on the doorknob.
Very interesting. Yet handkerchief with initial CW found in hallway just outside door.
Gosh, Pop, maybe the killer used that handkerchief to wipe his fingerprints off the doorknob.
Perhaps Inspector can now understand how picture of unseen person emerges from evidence left behind. Killer is 7 feet tall, wears green clothing, was close friend of dead man, and has initial CW. Should not be difficult to identify merely by questioning acquaintances of victim.
I'm afraid we can't do that, Chu. Guess I forgot to tell you, but we don't know who the victim is either.
I see. Very interesting. Then perhaps solution is even more obvious. Clues will lead illustrious inspector to killer, and then killer can supply identity of victim.
Boy, oh boy, Pop, you really wrapped that one up and laid it right on his doorstep.
Charlie Chu deserves no credit, merely follows wisdom of ancient ancestor, who say, if both factors in equation are unknown, then solution to problem must come from elsewhere.
Gee, Pop, that's heavy.
Bye.
Next, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. The story of America's favorite family of the Footlights and of their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. In the backstage suite at Milan's Hotel Raphael, Harry, Greg, Calvin, and Pop are awaiting Mary's arrival and the chance to begin rehearsals for their appearance at the opening of La Traviata at La Scala tomorrow evening. And we hear Greg say...
Say, does the TV set work in this room?
I don't know. We haven't spent that much time here, Greg.
Well, I turned on the TV the other night. They had on a Western.
Oh, really?
But it was all in a foreign tongue.
Well, Italian, probably. Yes, they dub in Italian on those.
It's funny to hear the Indians talk Italian.
Haven't come across the Komodo Dragon show yet, have you?
Well, I haven't watched too much of the TV. They have your game show, of course.
Yeah, sure.
And they don't have anything like the Komodo Dragon program, no, sir.
They have anything like Let's Make a Deal?
Is there any more of that wine left?
I think there's just a little bit here. Yeah, sure.
Well, when you get a chance, if you could pour me a glass of that, I'd appreciate it.
Gosh, I wish Mary would arrive. She said
yes.
She would take a cab and get over here right away so we could start rehearsing. I'm beginning to get worried about tomorrow night.
Yes.
Just say well.
Yeah, I will.
What are we going to wear, Greg? We haven't had any costume fitting or anything.
Don't worry about it. They all have your sizes. You're a 38 long, aren't you?
Yes.
Regular.
Regular would be all right.
And I'm about a 44 regular.
Say well, Kelvin.
I will. And Mary, she must be about a 38 long.
38 long or regular, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose.
She should be getting here any minute. Can't wait to see her
full
front hairdo.
That's enough for me.
Okay. How about you, Mr. Barlow?
Yes, I'll have just a taste.
Okay. Say when.
Right.
Wait a minute. That may be Mary now. I'll go and let her in.
Door is stuck.
Mary, is that you?
What?
The door is stuck. Is that you, Mary?
Yes, it's stuck. Oh. Can't you open it?
Glad you made it. Oh, here. Well,
hello there.
Hey, Mary. Welcome back.
Certainly good to see you. Boy, where have you been anyway?
Ever relieved to see you and that hairdo.
What do you think of it?
Signora Favuzzi did a beautiful job.
Yeah, she says she does all the hairstylists for the opera singers.
That's really bouffant, isn't it?
Don't move, Mary. I want to remember you this way.
What do you mean by that, Greg?
I mean, you're simply beautiful.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Marlowe. You're very kind.
Sounded kind of ominous there for a minute.
Boy, let me see, Mary. I've never seen you with a hairstyle like that. It must be about 3 feet around, isn't it? Looks
certainly
like a football
is.
Helmet.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful.
Why are you saying these things to Calvin? Well, I don't know. I'm trying to... I tell you, Mary, I'm worried sick about the opening of the opera, you know. We open Friday, and as you know, I don't sing very well.
And we haven't had one run-through yet, Greg. When are we going to have our first rehearsal?
We'll have cue cards there Friday night.
And so Mary returns at last to the Hotel Raphael, and rehearsals begin seriously. Tomorrow, the curtain rises on La Traviata, and you'll want to be here when we'll hear Greg Marlowe say...
Any more of that wine there?
That's tomorrow in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. Word Carr speaking. And now, through the courtesy of the Ashenfelter Whipsocket Company, we take you back to...
January 14th, 581,912 B.C. The discovery of fire. Bob and Ray was there.
Boy, look at her come down, Ab. Did you ever see it snow that hard?
Just once, I remember. It was in the big blizzard of 581,934 B.C. Now, there was a storm.
Well, this one bad enough to suit me. Almost a foot on the ground already and still coming down.
I suppose all of the tenants in the caves upstairs will be hollering down to us to shovel out their paths.
Yes, they demand more service all the time. They expect janitors to do everything but babysit for them.
Know what the people in 4G wanted me to do for them this morning?
What?
Sweep the bone out of their cave. Now, what do you think of that?
I know. What are you going to do? It's a buyer's market.
Yeah. Remember the good old days with the cave shortage right after the war? Didn't have to take any back talk then.
Yeah, those days are gone forever. Just a little while ago, the people in 6J hollered down that they were cold.
Cold, huh? Well, what were you supposed to do about that?
Beats me. Go up and rub their hands, I guess.
Sure would be nice if we could find some way to heat a cave in the winter.
Sure, but there's no way to do it. You know that.
Well, I don't know. Fellow told me once that lightning is hot.
Oh, maybe it is. But how are you going to get lightning inside a cave?
Probably wouldn't, or couldn't. What about that red stuff you get when lightning strikes a tree? You could carry that inside a cave.
Yes, I guess you could do that. And with the proper packaging and merchandising, you might make a lot of money.
Sure you could. Put it up in some kind of jar with attractive label. But you'd have to get a catchy name for it. Something, you know, public would remember.
Yeah, how about Ugg and Ab's Red Lightning?
No, too long. All the new products have short names like Whiz and Dip and Crisp.
How about Flash? That puts across lightning idea.
Not bad. But I think there's already a soap out by that name.
Well, let's see. Something short, you say. Why not call it Fire? That's got a catchy ring to it.
I think you've got it, Ugg. Fire, sounds good. We could put it out in quart and half-gallon jars.
Good idea. This day will go down in history. We've just discovered fire.
The idea of heating caves with fire caught on immediately. Ab and Ugg became wealthy tycoons, and from their simple discovery came a whole new way of life. And what sort of day was it? A day like all days that alter and illuminate our times. The date?
January 14th. 581,912 B.C., the discovery of fire. Bob and Ray was there.
You know what I want?
Uh-huh.
No, you don't. I want a new car.
You've got spring fever.
I'm desperate for a new car.
Know what I want?
What?
A beautiful screen porch for the house.
Me.
I can see a bunch of small town hicks squatting round the local flora whittling sticks in my hometown. What did I ever own down? I must be crazy, though the city girls are not so slow. Take me to the cornfed girls I used to know. I'm pining night and day for that old time you won't pay. Hometown, wander round your back streets. See you tumble down a shack street. I'm going back to see those coldy country cousins of mine. Hometown, where they get up in the morning and they're all so busy yawning. I'll get a welcome from this corny country cousins of mine. I see an old schoolhouse door we used to tumble through at four. There's a small candy store where I could go with us and lollipops and shout for more. Hometown, where the garden trees are shady, that's where Edie was a lady. I'm going back to see this corny country cousins of mine. I see an old schoolhouse door we used to tumble through at four. There's a small candy store where I could go with us and lollipops and jump for more. Hometown, where the garden trees are shining. That's where Edie was alighting. I'm going back to see those corny country cousins of mine.
Flanagan and Allen and Hometown.
The Massey Cadillac, Route 9W in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey, wants you to save from $2,400 to $3,500 and more on 1976 DeMassey Cadillac Company cars. So they're running a 10-day bicentennial sale through April 10th and offering a tremendous selection of Sevilles, Eldorados, and DeVilles at great savings. Imagine a brand-new custom Cadillac coupe for under $8,000. That's right, under $8,000. Complete, delivered. So don't pay more. Buy DeMassey and take advantage of this great 10-day sale. Save up to $3,500 and more. Offer only $209 a month. Lease a new 76 Cadillac Coupe DeVille on DeMassey's 36-month equity lease. In New Jersey, there are two DeMassey executive offices, Englewood Cliffs on Route 9W, 3 minutes from George Washington Bridge, and in Lyndhurst on Service Road, Routes 3 and 17, 8 minutes from the Lincoln Tunnel. Don't pay more by DeMassey Cadillac.
Now, once again, here's Fred Feldman.
Okay, getting downstairs, we continue to have a fairly good outlook in many areas around town. On the West Side Highway, for example, we have some very smoothly and light-moving traffic going northbound, and it stays that way up into the area of about 130th Street. Then you'll meet delays going up through the 140s. We have a stalled car again this evening, about the same place we had him yesterday. He's in the right lane, merged to your left. The delays are not significant at this time. Old Major Deegan was in trouble in both directions around Fordham Road, but the tie-up has been cleared. There are residual delays, particularly coming down the ramp from the George Washington Bridge area onto the northbound Deegan. Patience will get you through. Again, all lanes reopen. Elevated Berkner Expressway, a good part of the Cross Bronx, also in very good shape. Triborough Bridge was okay. FDR Drive with some fairly heavy spots through Midtown and toward the upper end, but there were no tie-ups there. All in all, it looks like a fairly decent rush hour around town so far, and now let's have this automatic commercial.
Me, I don't drink. And once again, now it's time to pick up more valuable tips for you home handymen as we pay another of our regular visits to the basement workshop here of Fred Falvey, the do-it-yourselfer. Fred, I couldn't help admiring that new ornamental design laid out on the ground in your front yard. Is that one of your do-it-yourself projects?
Yes, it is, Ray. I put that together with some inexpensive parts and simple shop tools. However, it's not an ornamental design laid out on the ground. It's a mosaic. I made it for the top of one of our lawn tables.
Oh, I see. And then he just removed the legs from the table when you were finished and laid them top on the ground. Is that it?
No, I didn't even have to go to that extra work, Ray. You see, I made most of the mosaic design out of lead buckshot. That caused the tabletop to become quite heavy, so as soon as we had a good rain that softened the soil, the table legs sank right into the yard.
Well, you'd never know they were still attached there just from looking at the project, so you've really come up with a work-saving idea that I'm sure all our friends of the radio audience will want to remember. And I know the home handymen now listening are also anxious to hear about the do-it-yourself project that you plan to describe for them today.
Well, Ray, I know the home handymen listening are anxious to hear about the project I plan to describe for them today,
yes.
So we might as well get right to it. I'm going to demonstrate how to use inexpensive parts and a few simple tools to make screens.
Well, I'm sure that that'll capture the fancy of many of our listeners, Fred. All types of Oriental art are becoming fashionable again, and I've visited several homes recently that had those beautifully decorated screens on display, but I never dreamed they could be made in a basement workshop.
Well, I don't think they can be, Ray. The screens I'm talking about are wire mesh window screens.
Oh, I see.
Window screens are bound to go up in price this summer if the energy shortage prevents us from using our air conditioners, but the home handyman can be preparing for that situation right now.
Just using inexpensive parts and a few simple tools.
That's right. You really seem to be getting the hang of this thing, Ray. So you can appreciate what I've done here by nailing 4 yardsticks together to form a suitable frame for our window screen.
Uh-huh. And I suppose yardsticks make a specially good frame for windows that are, well, 36 inches square.
That's right. Of course, for smaller windows, you can just cut part of the yardstick off with an ordinary number 6 crosscut saw. The important part of the project is putting on the screening wire. It has to be woven very carefully, just the way I've started here at the bottom of the frame.
Gee, that really looks like a painstaking job. With all those little tacks driven into the yardstick right next to each other so you can string the wire back and forth.
Yes, you need at least 20 strands of wire to the inch in each direction. Otherwise, small bugs could come right through the screen.
Well, now, isn't it pretty expensive to buy that much wire?
No, not at all. This is ordinary 000 electrical wire. That's the same size that's used for a lot of the circuitry and transistor radios. So I'd suggest that the handyman start by removing the wiring from transistors around the house that don't work anymore. Then just weave it back and forth across the frame to make a window screen.
Well, that sounds like a money-saving tip that I'm sure our listeners will want to remember. But it must take quite a few radios to provide enough wire for just one screen.
Well, yes, it does, Ray. But fortunately, transistors that aren't in working order can be purchased for very little at any store that deals in broken electronics equipment. And then you just grasp the end of each wire with tweezers like this and weave it back and forth to make your screen.
Gee, you know, that looks like a terribly tedious job.
Well, it is. You can barely see what you're doing with the naked eye at all, but I found one transistor radio that works among a batch I bought that don't. So I listen to it to help pass the time while I'm weaving wire.
Well, now, that's another helpful tip to remember. And when you're finished, I'm sure you'll have a fine window screen for a fraction of what you would cost to have them ready-made.
Yes, I'm sure that's true, Ray. I haven't priced ready-made screens since everything's gone up so much. But for this project, I got the yardsticks free at the hardware store. And the 6,000 broken radios I needed for the wiring cost less than $1 apiece. You get a very nice discount when you buy them in quantity.
Well, boy, you certainly can't go wrong on a radio for less than $1.
No.
Especially when you don't care whether it works or not.
That's the beauty part.
So, once again, we've seen another perfect example of better living by doing it yourself. Here from the Basement Workshop of Fred Falvey, the do-it-yourselfer.
Good morning, sir.
You know, I've come through this toll booth 400 or 500 times and never, ever...
Sir?
I forgot my wallet. The whole thing. Don't have a penny.
All right, just pull over there and go to the office.
See, that's the worst part. I'm in this fantastic hurry for a board meeting.
Just fill out the form.
I'm late. Look, here, take my watch for security, okay?
I can't do that.
Costs $1,500. Tells you when you're at sea level.
Just pull over there, sir.
I don't have time. Fool. Hey, yes, I do. You can take this brand new Time magazine, too.
The forms in the office.
You're going to love this week's theater section. Or, look, how about science? Look at here what's in science.
Just
huh?
Pull over there, sir.
Think how much fun it'll be reading Time magazine out here where it's lonely.
Sir.
It's bright and exciting. It makes your whole day go.
Right.
And when people come by, you can say things.
All right. I'll take it.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I'll be back through here 5:30 and pick up my Time magazine, okay?
Oh, wait. I get off at 4.
I'll come to your house. Where do you live?
I'll draw you a map.
Okay.
Just pull over there.
Over there?
To the office.
I appreciate this.
Time makes everything more interesting, including you.
And an item or two from our community calendar right here. The Greenwich House at 27 Barrow Street in the Village offers free classes in rubber bridge for senior citizens. Intermediate players meet on Mondays and Fridays. Beginners meet on Tuesdays. And advanced players meet on Wednesdays. That's Greenwich House, 27 Barrow Street. And kids who collect things, especially things that relate in any way to the history and culture of America, are invited to take part in a memorabilia fair Saturday and Sunday, April 10th and 11th at Essex Catholic High School in Newark. For information, call 201-482-5550.
When it comes to new ideas in men's raincoats...
And here are good news. No delays reported to us at the Bob and Ray desk on the subways or the commuting trains.
Any word on the trophy trade yet, Ray?
No, we haven't had a word on that.
Don't know when it's going to start, huh?
No, I have no idea.
Probably tomorrow.
Oh, I wouldn't think so. I think we'd be notified if that was going to happen.
Sure we would.
We have the news now with Harry Hennessy and then more Bob and Ray here at WOR New York and RKO General Station. It's 5 o'clock.
Top stories in the news at this hour. W.J. Ussery, Labor Secretary for the federal government, says some considerable progress has been made toward ending the nationwide Teamsters strike. Mayor Beam says that the provisions in the contract which averted a transit strike in New York City today cannot be extended to other municipal unions without toppling the city's plan to get out of the red. and the New York State Court of Appeals says Patrick Cunningham must testify before the Najari grand jury. Winning numbers in the New Jersey Weekly Lottery drawn today, 870 and 649. Millionaire finalist number was 31314. That's the 5 o'clock report. Harry Hennessy sitting in for John Scott. Next scheduled news at 5:30 on WOR Radio 710, The Talk of New York. Now more of Bob and Radio New York.
And we've gotten word that correspondent Wally Ballou has just stumbled across another episode of the nation's bicentennial story. It's unfolding out in Huntley, Wisconsin. So for a report on that, we go now to Wally Ballou.
Wally Ballou, and speaking directly from a small room in the basement of the courthouse in Huntley, Wisconsin. And on the wall in front of me is a large electronic numbering device. It currently reads 8,197,372. Now it's 371, 370, 369. It appears to be going down.
It's going down at the rate of one number a second, Mr. Ballou. Here in Huntley, we're counting down second by second to the exact instant of the 200th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Uh-huh.
And that time will come now in precisely 8,197,326 seconds. Now it's 325, 324. 323, 322.
Yes, well, I think we all know what counting down means now that you've explained it, Mr. Welberding.
Yeah, it's not too hard to understand. 311, 310, 309.
For the benefit of those that are listening in, I might mention that the gentleman here beside me counting backwards is Mr. Hubert Welberding. Mr. Welberding is an electronics engineer who devised this unique way for his town to mark the bicentennial.
285, 284, 283... Actually, I'm not just an engineer, Mr. Ballou. I am an electronics genius.
Oh.
See, I've connected this timer to our new replica of the Liberty Bell up on the roof of the courthouse, and so that means that the bell will start ringing automatically on July 4th at the exact second this country becomes 200 years old.
Well, I imagine it must have taken a great deal of calculation for you to figure the precise time when that last signature was put on the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, I read every available account of the signing. Even then, the records weren't too precise. Well, I know that I'm very close when I say that the Declaration became official at 14 minutes and 26 seconds after 8 o'clock on the evening of July 4th, 1776.
So your timer is ticking off the seconds to that exact time, huh?
No, as I mentioned, I'm not just an engineer. I'm also a genius in such fields as mathematical theory. So I realized at once that the Declaration of Independence was signed in the Eastern time zone while we're on Central time out here. So Wisconsin actually broke off from the British an hour before Pennsylvania did.
Well, of course, they didn't have time zones in 1776.
Oh, really? Are you sure about that?
Yeah, quite sure. Does that throw off your calculations?
Well, a little, I guess. But there are already a couple of other minor variables I've built into my equation. You see, we want our bell to ring exactly 200 years after the Liberty Bell rang in Philadelphia. So I've had to estimate how long it took somebody to run up to the bell tower with the news after the signing. And my guess is 2 minutes and 38 seconds. But, that could be 10 seconds off either way.
Well, you certainly have given this a lot of thought, Mr. Welberding. Apparently you never ran across the fact that the bell wasn't rung until the Declaration was officially read to the people.
No kidding. Oh, that must have been almost an hour later.
It was 4 days later. That's when it came back from the printer.
4 days? Oh, gosh, that could make things quite a bit off.
Yes.
Let me figure in the calculator here. Say there are 24 hours in a day, just for the sake of argument.
That sounds about right.
Okay, so that's 96 hours in 4 days, and 60 minutes to an hour, and 60 seconds to a minute.
Right.
Holy cow, I'm off by 345,000.
Yeah, that's besides the 2 minutes and 38 seconds to run to the bell tower, because somebody already would have been there within 4 days.
Yeah, but I do gain that hour for us being on Central Time.
Well, you already figured that in once. We agreed that that was wrong anyway, so you should lose an hour instead of gaining one.
You really think so?
Well, you certainly wouldn't gain the same hour twice. I thought you said you were a mathematical genius.
Yeah, that's what I thought I said, too. Let's see. The timer now reads 8,197,105, but I have to add 345,000 over here, and I subtract an hour here. Then there's a guy running up to the bell tower. So, no, that's wrong. You know, I don't think this figure on the timer signifies anything at all.
I agree, but it's still been interesting to hear about the unique way one American town plans to mark the bicentennial. And this is Wally Ballou in Huntley, Wisconsin, sending it back to Bob and Ray in New York. Hi there, boys and girls. Let's all come to water. Another meeting of the Charlie Chipmunk Club. And here to read our latest Charlie Chipmunk story is your old friend, Uncle Edgar.
All right, thank you, Bob, and hello, boys and girls. For today's adventure, let's all turn to page 22 of the current issue of the Charlie Chipmunk magazine, right up there at the very top of the page.
I sure hope you youngsters have all picked up a copy of the current issue of the Charlie Chipmunk magazine. You certainly don't want to miss a single one of this year's full-color bicentennial foldouts. When the series is completed, you'll have the entire pictorial history of 200 years of chipmunks in America. So if you haven't obtained the current issue, make Mommy buy a copy today. Now back to Uncle Edgar.
Thank you. Beginning our story today in the first panel, children, we see that Charlie Chipmunk is at home in bed with a sneezy cold. He's got the covers all pulled up tight.
Well, we all know that feverish blah feeling that comes with common head colds, don't we, boys and girls? So why not build up your resistance against germs by taking Charlie Chipmunk Tonic every day? Charlie Chipmunk Tonic comes in all your favorite flavors, chocolate, maple sugar, wild cherry, and pecan toffee. Yet a big 4-ounce bottle is only $6.95 at better pharmacies everywhere. Again, Uncle Edgar.
Now, in the next picture, we see Charlie Chipmunk looking out the window and wishing his cold would go away so he'll soon be out playing with all his little forest friends.
Well, you can just bet that Charlie's wish will come true before long, boys and girls, because he's already started loading up on genuine Charlie Chipmunk round-the-clock cold remedy. Charlie Chipmunk remedy is so strong, it's not even recommended for adults. You'll be delighted to see how its nerve-deadening agents kill the muscular discomfort of a cold, while its high alcohol content makes you think you feel better almost instantly. Yet Charlie Chipmunk round-the-clock cold remedy sells for only a little more than bonded bourbon.
I hate to appear finicky, Bob, but it seems to me that you're pushing some drug items today that probably shouldn't be given to children.
Well, of course, it's not your job to worry about that, Uncle Edgar, but, well, since you brought it up, I can set your mind at ease by telling you that all of the medical items we recommend have been tested at our big pharmaceutical laboratory out in Chipmunk Land, California.
Well, I've seen that place they call a laboratory, Bob, and it's really nothing but a pinball arcade and the amusement park out there, so I'm still kind of worried about the kids.
Well, I think it's your job. You should be worried about that after the description of our pharmaceutical laboratory. I'd suggest you go on with the story before you get yourself into real trouble.
Well, I'll try. Well, now in the next picture, kids, we see that Charlie's little friend, Gustav Groundhog, has come to pay him a visit.
And just wait till Charlie sees what Gustav has brought with him, children. It's a big brochure describing all the facilities available for sickly people at the Charlie Chipmunk Sanitarium and Mineral Bath just outside Poplar Bluff, Missouri. The waters there will certainly cure Charlie's head cold, but they're also good for rheumatism, bad blood, or swelling in any part of the body. Yet the cost for a semi-private room and complete mineral bath facilities is only $62 a day. Tell your folks you want to go there and be cured now.
Hey, Bob, I'm afraid I just can't hold still for any more of this. You're trying to put these little children into the hands of obvious quacks. And I'm not going to have my name associated with that at all.
Well, your name's not even going to be associated with this program if you don't stop making wild charges like that against the fine people at the Charlie Chipmunk organization.
Well, I'm not saying that all of them are crooks. I'm just saying that a few probably ought to go to jail for claiming that a mineral bath will cure a serious illness.
Boy, I think you're just getting yourself in deeper when you may not know what you're talking about. Why don't you finish the story, Uncle Edgar?
Well, I will if I can, but I'm really getting upset about this. Now, in the next picture, kids, we see that Charlie is feeling better, and he's gotten up out of bed.
That's right, children. He's risen from his bed and walked, thanks to possession of a miracle-working Charlie Chipmunk good luck charm. It's made of genuine ground-up frogs and is worn around the neck to ward off evil spirits that can make you sick. Yet Charlie Chipmunk charms cost only $4.95. Uncle Edgar?
Now, in the next picture, we find that Charlie is all well again, and he and Gustav Groundhog are out roller skating.
Oh, sorry to interrupt, Uncle Edgar, but time's up for this week.
Well, that's okay. I've got several government agencies I want to report you to as quickly as possible.
So be sure to join us for more fun and stories at the very next meeting of the Charlie Chipmunk Club, boys and girls.
I just don't know who to call first. I can think of at least three departments that probably would want to send somebody out here.
Now, before we all kneel down on our little rugs and bow low as we face Chipmunk Land, here's Uncle Edgar to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
And a one, a two, a one, two, three.
The Crutchford Braid and Tassel Company invite you to share another nostalgic interlude in the lives of the Pittmans.
I'm often amazed to see how the small events of everyday life can stir up recollections of my childhood which I thought were long forgotten. It seems as though I never experienced a tornado or see a summer dust storm destroying the land without thinking back to the happy years of my boyhood in Oklahoma. That was a time of hopes and dreams in my young life. There's one incident that always stands out in my recollection, more vividly than all the rest. My parents were sitting in the parlor of our old farmhouse, merely staring at the wall and enjoying their poverty. And suddenly, I burst into the room full of the exuberance that only a young boy can possess.
Hi, Ma. Hi, Pa. I've got some important news, and if you'll notice, it's left me full of the exuberance that only a young boy can possess.
Well, you've been full of that before, Jimmy Joe, but it's never developed into anything more serious, so I wouldn't worry.
Oh, I'm not worried, Pa. That's because my proposed career as a famous writer has just gotten underway. Old Mr. Tidwell, down at the Busy Bee Cafe, has hired me to write an advertising poem that he can have printed on signs next to the highway. You know, some sort of a catchy rhyme like the ones they have along the road to sell shaving cream. My pay is going to run well into two figures.
Well, I just don't know about all this, Jimmy Joe. Taking Mr. Tidwell's money for that childish drivel you write just doesn't seem quite honest. How high into two figures is your pay going to run?
32 cents, Ma. Well, I know it's a lot of money, but I'm sure you won't think I'm taking it under false pretenses when you hear the great poem I've written to go on Mr. Tidwell's highway signs. Can I read it to you, please? Can I, huh?
All right, Jimmy Joe. I know you won't give us a minute's peace until we pretend to listen, so get it over with.
Okay, thanks, Pa. It's your words of inspiration that really inspire my creative genius to flower. I'll just get a load of what I've written so far to go on Mr. Tidwell's highway signs. In Xanadu did Kublai Khan a stately pleasure dome decree, where Alf the sacred river ran through caverns measureless to man, down to the sunless sea. Then on the second sign,
Now, just a minute, Jimmy Joe. Do you mean all that stuff you read us so far goes on the first little sign?
Yeah, I have to do that because it's kind of a long poem. By the time I get from Kublai Khan and Xanadu all the way to the Busy Bee and why tourists ought to eat there. But I'm sure my material is so good that the drivers will all slow down to read it.
Well, I'd be the last one to say you don't write near as good as you think you do, Jimmy Joe, but I'm not so sure a tourist will realize what he's missing until he's already gotten past it. So why don't you just tear up that poem and go on to bed, son?
Well, okay, if you think that's my best bet. Good night, Pa. Good night, Ma.
Good night, Jimmy Joe. Good night, baby Lucille.
Good night, Roy Boy. Good night, Gene Autry's horse.
Hasta luego, Uncle Wolfgang.
Good night, Stan Kenton and his orchestra. Good night, General Coxey and his bonus marchers.
Good night, Grandpa. Good night, Jimmy Joe.
Good night, Ma. Good night, Vic and Sade.
And in the years that followed, my poems were destined never to appear along that highway, even though it grew from a two-lane blacktop road to become an interstate turnpike.
Good night, Charlie McCarthy. Good night, Joe McCarthy.
Still, my boyhood remained a happy one, there amid the love of my parents and brothers and sisters in that big old house.
Good night, chicken coop. Good night, pigsty.
It was a place for the making of memories, and they're memories that I'm destined to carry with me for the rest of my life.
This week's episode of The Pittmans has been brought to you by the Crutchford Braid and Tassel Company, producer of snappy doodads to convert your rundown hovel into a showplace. Whether you need that extra touch of gold fringe around the scarf on top of your piano, or only a few fuzzballs to hang from your kitchen curtains, the name to remember is Crutchford. And be sure to join us here soon for another story of loving warmth in the lives of the Pittmans.
Now the makers of Einbinder Flypaper, a name you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations, invite you to ride with the men of Squad Car 119.
My name's Sam Finch. Me and my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., are the unsung heroes of the police force. We ride a prowl car at night. Sometimes the light bulb inside the glove compartment is burned out. Other times it's working. Either way, we keep on the lookout for trouble. The other evening, we just made a short stop at a supermarket to cash our paychecks when my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., turned to me and said,
"Why do you suppose that store manager won't accept our police badges for identification when they, you know, we try to cash our checks, Sam?"
"Yeah, beats me, Ralph R. Jr. He claims he needs something with our name, address, and phone number on it."
"Well, I don't think it'd be very smart to print a cop's name, address, and phone number on his police badge, Sam. Then every crook we drag in would know where we live."
"Yeah, that's what I told the store manager. But he said he didn't care if crooks know where we live. He just wants to know where we live before he'll cash our paychecks."
"Well, it might be okay to print addresses and phone numbers on our badges if we only had to show them to store managers. But we have to show them to crooks, too, Sam."
"Yeah, I know. That's what I told the store manager, but he said he didn't care."
"I guess citizens just don't care enough anymore, Sam. Where do you want to go next to try to cash our checks?"
"Gee, I don't know. Most every place is closed."
"Calling Car 119. Car 119, a holdup in progress at the supermarket near Hill and Spring Street. That's the supermarket near Hill and Spring, 119.
Supermarket near Hill and Spring, huh?"
"Yeah, that's us, Sam. Let's roll."
"We don't have to roll, Ralph R. Jr. We're parked right in front of it. That's the market where we just tried to cash our checks."
"Oh, gee, I hate to go back in there again, Sam. I said some pretty snippy things to that store manager."
"Yeah, me too. And we'd have to talk to him for sure. You always have to talk to the store manager after a holdup. It's police regulations."
"I sure wish there was some way to get around that, Sam. I don't want to face that store manager again. I said some awful snippy things to him."
"Yeah, I let him have it, too, when he said he wouldn't cash our checks. He's bound to remember us if we go back in there again."
"That's pretty much the way I look at it, Sam. We were just in there 5 minutes ago, and he's bound to remember all the snippy things I said to him."
"Yeah, that's pretty much the way I look at it, Ralph R. Jr."
"That's pretty much the way I look at it, too, Sam. I said some awfully snippy things."
"Yeah, you did. I did, too. He'll remember."
Car 119, disregard that call involving a holdup at the supermarket near Hill and Spring. The case has been handled by the man of Squad Car 227. The suspect has been apprehended, booked, and brought to trial. In 1 minute, the results of that trial.
While we wait to hear the outcome of today's exciting case, here's a money-saving tip from the makers of Einbinder Flypaper. Friends, are you in the habit of taking your flypaper down at bedtime and putting it in a drawer because you think insects sleep at night? If so, you may be costing yourself more in the long run. Flies not only remain awake while you're sleeping, they may even multiply and create more flies. So play it safe and leave your flypaper hanging 24 hours a day. But be sure it's the brand you know is working for you round the clock. Genuine Einbinder Flypaper, a name you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations.
The suspect in that supermarket holdup at Hill and Spring was released for lack of evidence. However, the store manager was convicted on two counts of refusing to cash a police officer's paycheck. He's now serving his prison term in the California State Correctional Institution at Vacaville.
So another desperate criminal is brought to justice thanks to the unsung heroes of the police force, the men who ride the squad cars at night.
He sets, fakes, drives down the middle for two.
I'm Rick Barry. Competition is something we complain about, but let's face it, we love it. Because tough competition makes you better at whatever you do.
And competition is what makes TWA a better airline. TWA flies against the toughest competition in the business. So to get you to fly with us, we have to be better. That's why TWA is out to give you the best on-time performance to every city we fly to. And that's why only TWA gives you a choice of movies on every movie flight, plus exciting PGA golf highlights. To TWA, being the best isn't everything. It's the only thing.
And if you're planning a trip to Chicago, TWA has 18 nonstops every business day. So remember, to TWA, being the best isn't everything. It's the only thing.
And here's Fred Feldman. The Auburn Motor Company, maker of fine cars up to but not including 1938, brings you another episode of The Gathering Dusk, The heartwarming story of a girl who lives in mortal fear because she considers it the safest place to live. As we look in on the Bessinger household today, Edna is throwing darts at a picture of President Grover Cleveland in the downstairs game room. It's mid-afternoon, and Sergeant Brockstaff, the director of the Village Police Department's Missing Persons Bureau, is just arriving.
Oh, it's you, Bureau of Missing Persons Director Brockstaff. It was kind of you to drop everything and rush right over when I called. I know you must be terribly busy these days.
Well, no, as a matter of fact, things are very quiet around the Bureau, Miss Bessinger.
Well, I find that very surprising. I read in the newspaper recently that the population of the village dropped by more than 200 people in the last census. And I thought it would take months for you to find all of them.
Well, those people aren't missing. Most of them just moved out of town when the Bell factory closed.
Well, I'm glad you've tracked them down and know where they all are. Which reminds me, I wonder if you'd be kind enough to give me the new address of the Frobishes, who used to live down on the corner. I got a Christmas card from them that was postmarked at the county seat, but I don't know their street address.
Well, I'm sorry, Miss Bessinger. I'm not acquainted with anyone named Frobisher. I have no idea where they moved.
Well, then, they're missing persons, and I assume your bureau is leaving no stone unturned in its efforts to find them.
No, ma'am. You see, they wouldn't get on our list unless someone had reported them missing.
Well, you just said yourself that they're missing.
No, I didn't say that. I just said I don't know where they moved.
I guess I should have suspected foul play when I got that Christmas card from them. They never sent me one when they lived right here in the neighborhood. And it's always suspicious when people change their normal patterns. Don't you find that true in police work?
Well, occasionally, I suppose, but I don't imagine you call me over here just to discuss my methods for conducting police work.
No, you're right as rain about that, Bureau of Missing Persons Director Brockstaff. I've really been in a tizzy all day. I was out digging in the garden this morning and made a grisly find, as the newspapers might put it. I dug up a human bone. And I'm sure it's part of the remains of someone your department has been searching for.
Well, we're not searching for anyone at the present time, Miss Bessinger. And our records on missing persons go back for at least 50 years.
Well, I have no idea how long this poor soul may have been buried there. Or maybe he's someone from out of town who never bothered getting on your list. But you can see his remains for yourself right there on the table.
Well, I'm not a medical expert, Miss Bessinger, but I'm quite sure this isn't a human bone. Looks like it came from a T-bone steak. I guess some dog just buried it in your garden.
Oh, jumping Jiminy. I do believe you may be right, Bureau of Missing Persons Director Brockstaff. I have a complete set of my own x-rays hanging on the bedroom wall upstairs, and I admit I couldn't find any bone pictured there that matched this specimen. But I just assumed I was built differently. Well, you can't know what a burden this lifts from my shoulders. I almost feel as if I'm no longer standing in the gathering dusk.
Thanks, Dan. We'll see you tomorrow, and I guess it does it for us, for Bob and Ray, for this Thursday.
Golly, another day's come and gone. Don't forget the WOR Radio Mystery Theater. It follows the Fulton Lewis News Commentary. Tonight it's called The White Ghost and stars Ralph Bell and Ann Williams.
And we'll see you tomorrow at 4:15. Until then, this is Ray Goulding reminding you to write if you get work.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumbs.
And this is WOR New York, an RKO General Station.